Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your workday. So tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Tess, who have we got now?
Catherine Bennett, Chair of Epidemiology from Deakin University. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Good morning.
Great to have you on the airwaves again. We really enjoyed our conversation with you a couple of weeks back and thought it be good to have you back again.
Now things have changed.
Actually, Catherine, this is what we want to talk about with you. We're particularly interested in this debate around elimination versus suppression. Now, you know, from what I understand, we're all sitting in a suppression strategy. Could you explain to our listeners what the difference between the two is and why we're actually perhaps sitting in the suppression strategy as opposed to elimination?
Yeah, I think that very question is actually what's being debated here. As an epidemiologist, you know, when we look at these things, you have to move through suppression to achieve elimination. So elimination is the idea that you have no local transmission, and suppression is what you do to achieve that. So there's two conversations going on about elimination at the moment. One is big picture, saying if we do suppress the virus, we have no local transmission, can we maintain elimination long-term? And that's actually a bigger conversation about border closures to the rest of the world and so on. But what's come up recently is really a push to try and apply a more stringent set of restrictions as they applied in New Zealand the first time round, to in order to not only go for suppression in the short term, but actually say our goal is elimination. So it's actually almost semantics in a way, but I think the real conversation is what level of restriction do we need? How hard do we go? And that's what I think is being argued behind this elimination push, is trying to say, let's do what New Zealand did and go very hard.
So what you're saying is that before you can eliminate, you need to suppress.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the level of restrictions that you impose is what actually will enable elimination to take place, if at all.
That's right. And part of the argument that's been put up recently is that, you know, what's happened in Victoria is an example of failed suppression. You know, if we'd gone for elimination, this wouldn't have happened. And in fact, that's not correct, because all the signs are that we did not only suppress this really well in Victoria as we did in all the other states, but we probably achieved elimination through that process. And we know from Brett Sutton and others saying around the genomic work they're doing that the indications are, just as it is in New South Wales, that the Victorian cases aren't the same virus strains that were circulating earlier on. This is a new strain, so it was reintroduced. So, in fact, we know the restrictions we put in place the first time around. We know we had community transmission then. We just weren't measuring it, so we didn't know the cases. But we did achieve suppression to the point of effective elimination if we're not seeing that virus in the current cases. So, you know, I think if we'd had the conversation a month ago about whether we needed to go as hard as New Zealand, the conversation then was New Zealand probably went harder than they needed to, because we'd achieved elimination Australia-wide pretty much, except we were still bringing travellers home and Australians home and so on.
Now, I'd like to talk a bit about restrictions, but before we do that, what are your reflections on what's happening here in Victoria at the moment? Is it out of control, and have our responses been appropriate?
So, just to talk briefly about New South Wales, I think that demonstrates, because they've been watching this so closely, which is what we hoped they would do if they found themselves in a situation where the virus had got into the community, and it just demonstrates how quickly this thing can take off. So 45 cases known to be linked to that one episode at the Crossroads Hotel. That's actually a mirror then of what happened in Victoria. And we had some cases picked up early on. There was perhaps a bit of a distraction around the talk around our quarantine, where the focus was on the failure of quarantine, because really what was happening is we'd had that virus taken home by a number of workers at the same time, and we had 10, 20 crossroad episodes happening at once. And our crossroad hotel equivalent were schools that were in very well-connected communities, in the towers, as we know, in public housing. So that's why it really took off so quickly in Victoria. And we had the misfortune, and I think this is where luck does play out in this virus, because it depends which person has it and which part of the community they take it to. We simultaneously had a number of large clusters take off. Mm. In terms of whether we're in control, it's frightening to see the numbers still going up. But in fact, they would be going up much more steeply if this was not in control. So it's, while the numbers are not what we want to see, we don't want to see another 400 cases again today. We'll hear shortly what our case count is. But in fact, the case growth is relatively consistent. It's just coming off a higher base 5 days ago when this was still spiking, when we'd just gone into citywide lockdown. So while the numbers aren't good, at the same time, they're not taking off as they would if this was an out-of-control situation.
Catherine, one of our listeners asks, given that Victoria is now where New South Wales
was... New South Wales is where Victoria was a few weeks back.
Do you think that they're actually making a mistake in New South Wales by not shutting down harder?
New South Wales is looking at every single place very closely, as we do in Victoria. We've just got, you know, a lot of cases to look at. There they can focus on areas where they see weak points. And what has emerged are, you know, cafes and other points where suddenly your one case might have more contacts than you'd want. And the speed of this spread is, you know, the thing that's challenging them at the moment. The problem for them, I suppose, is that the virus has gone back to different parts of the community, and it doesn't identify a local area you might lock down. It means that they've got a number of focus points. But I am sure if they feel that they can't contain the clusters, and when they're going out to the next round of contacts, if, as they are finding, more often, you know, they're already infectious and you've got another round of contacts, then I think just in order to support that contact tracing, even if it's just short term, pulling in a higher level of restriction would definitely help the health department go ahead. But they'll make the call when they see that that's the thing that's going to tip this, you know, control in their favour if they feel it's not there already.
We've seen, Catherine, you know, the genome testing is really, really important in ascertaining where it's, you know, where this particular strand started and where it spread to. I'm a bit concerned that we've seen medical officers talking about that a little bit earlier, but now all of a sudden we're not allowed to know it. We're not, you know, that information is not allowed to be shared because it's going into an inquiring.
Yeah, and it's, I think they've said enough to satisfy me, you know,
okay.
that these, the Victorian cases were, that they weren't seeing the viruses that were circulating in, you know, March, April, that so this in effect was replaced and we had a new introduction or new introductions that might be plural. Not every positive, you know, swab is cultured and tested,
yeah.
And even if they try to, they can't always do the genomics. They can't always culture the virus to allow them to do that. New South Wales is very aggressively using genome sequencing because they not only want to know, not necessarily where it started, because I think they know the influx of cases they're seeing now is linked to the cases that was, you know, in Victoria, the same strain, but also that they're not actually starting to see any re-emergence of virus that might have been already, you know, in New South Wales, but just below the surface in subclinical cases. So they're watching it to make sure that they're not being distracted by local cases that they then need to follow as a separate cluster, instead of thinking that, you know, oh, they're all part of crossroads, which still might not be the case. So yeah, it's a very helpful tool in epidemiology, but at the same time, two people having a similar strain doesn't mean they got it from each other. It means that they're linked to a broader cluster. And I think there's an element of trying to also manage information so it's interpreted for the public rather than giving people data that they might misconstrue sometimes. So, you know,
that's a useful insight.
So, I mean, you're, you know, what you said just a bit earlier, Catherine, is you're happy with the information that you're getting professionally. And for me, I'd like to know more. But if you're getting the information you need, then that's good enough for me.
Well, I think I'm getting the summary, and I think that's what's telling me that, you know, we don't have a whole lot of different strains circulating in Victoria. They haven't tested them all, but the suggestion is that these are all related and likely to go back to that, you know, initial breach of the border, you know. So I think at that level, of course, as an epidemiologist, I'd love more.
Yes.
So I could be really getting my hands on it, but, you know, I actually think... that's the key point here, and I think that's been made clearly. And so if we know that this is a reintroduction, coming back to the earlier point, you know, it doesn't mean that our restrictions failed last time. They actually did work. And now we've got not only the stage three restrictions back, but they're actually bolstered because we now are encouraging mask wearing. But more importantly, we're doing this testing, and in the high-risk areas... They're even testing people without symptoms.
Yes.
So very different to the first time. We can actually see the virus in the community. The health department knows not only who has it and where those clusters are growing, and so they can chase those. They're also learning from it to understand what our weak points are in terms of transmission, and that's what will inform any further tightening up of restrictions.
Catherine, you know, on the subject of restrictions, and I know this is a somewhat speculative question, but what would stage four restrictions look like?
I think it's not necessarily saying, okay, we just shut everything down, you know, and I think that was New Zealand's approach up front, which worked for them, but some have argued they probably went harder than they needed to. We're in a different position now because we can actually look at our own data to see how populations are mingling, where our transmission's happening. So it might be stepping up into more, you know, directions around mask wearing and so on, particularly in certain circumstances, and that might become mandatory, not voluntary in some settings. So it might be regional, or it might be about specific businesses if they think, you know, all of a sudden, and we haven't really seen this, but if retail outlets started to become a you know, corridor of transmission, then I'm sure that would be something that would either have much more stringent rulings put in place or possibly closed down.
Do you mean like the Minimax incident in Brighton yesterday?
Yeah, so I guess it is looking at all those things, both process or behaviours. So if they see high-risk behaviours, that's more likely to become targeted, as, well, we can't trust people, therefore we'll have to close it down. But equally, it'll be driven, I think, to a large extent by where they see, how they see the virus behaving in terms of, you know, community transmission. And that's what we want, because that's the investment in the things that are going to make a difference, not just a widespread shutdown and economic impact when only part of that might be the thing that's, you know, working for us.
Right. Look, we've run out of time, Catherine. I want to thank you again for making time to talk to us. I love, you know, you're talking in plain language, informative, you know, giving people an idea where it's at, you know, from your perspective, how you're perceiving it, but, you know, that people can understand what you're saying, and I really appreciate that. It's very valuable, and I hope we can speak to you again probably in a couple of weeks. Who knows?
Yes, maybe it'll be a happier conversation then.
I hope it is.
So thank you again for your time, and particularly thank you for your work. It's really, really important. And just briefly, Tass, we just got a message here from a listener that actually said, what extra data do you want, Mac? Are you an epidemiologist? No, I'm not. I'm just naturally suspicious when governments of all colour don't want to share information.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.